All right, we're getting here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, "A mafkid chavit etzel chaveiro, person who deposited a barrel, pitcher with his friend, velo yichdula balim makom, that they did not designate a particular place where it must be, v'tiltala, then the balim carry it, v'nishtabra, and it breaks when they're moving it. Imi toch yado nishbira, if it fell or broke while he was handling it, litzorcho chayav, if he was handling it for his own benefit or for his own purposes, then he is chayav. Litzorcha, if it was for the benefit or the purposes of the barrel itself, then patur, then he is patur. Litzorcha, for instance, is shaita b'makom haturfa, v'krova l'ishtaber, was in a place that was exposed, a place that could have been broken. So he's moving it for the safety of that item, rather than litzorcho, where he wants to get some utilization out of it, or maybe even steal it. We'll see later on in the Gemara how they describe this. So now, imishenicha, once he returns it or places it down, nishbira, at that point it breaks, ben litzorcho patur, then it's irrespective of why he moved it. Now that it is in place, then there's no obligation on him. Yichdula balim makom, if the balim designated a particular place where they wanted it placed, or that it should be, v'tiltala, and then he picked it up and utilized it, v'nishbira, and it broke, ben mitoch yado, ben mishenicha. It's irrespective of when he's doing this, whether it's while he is engaged with the item, or whether after he's returned it to its location, v'tzorcho chayav, he did it for his own purposes, or his own utilization, he's chayav, v'tzorcha, for the benefit of the item itself, then he is patur. So now the Gemara is going to discuss the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa, which seem to be a stira between them, which revolves around the return of the item to the original location. The difference being that in the Reisha, when you return the item, somehow that gets you an exemption. Whereas in the Seifa, when you return the item, it doesn't change any of the dynamic over here, and you're still obligated. So who's the author of this Mishnah, or how do we reconcile that difference within the Mishnah? Hamani. So who's the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Shmaeli. It's Rabbi Shmuel. It's a machloka that we saw at the end of Baba Kama between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. And the Gemara is suggesting that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shmuel. Damar lo be'inan dat balim. That you don't require the knowledge of the balim when you return an object to them. So when you've taken an object and then you return it, you don't need the balim to be aware of the fact that you returned it. Titania, hagonev tolem min ha'eder. Someone who steals a young lamb from the flock, v'sela min akis, or he takes a coin out of the wallet or the money pouch, v'makom shkanav yachzir, from the place that he took it, he puts it back, divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel simply says, you just got to return it to where you took it from, and then you've discharged your obligation at the shivat akzela, asher gazal. And as Tosafot points out, how does the Gemara know about whether he was miyached makom or not miyached makom? Is because you have two examples over here. You have an example of the tleh, you have the example of the sela. The tla is usually something where you don't have a designated place. It goes around, it grazes in different locations. So that's something that doesn't have a fixed location. A coin is usually something that does have a fixed location. It's in your money pouch. You know where you keep your money. And therefore, it's saying, in irrespective of whether you've designated a place or not designated a place, what Rabbi Shmuel says is, if you return it, you're done with it. So now, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Tzarich Dat Balim. Rabbi Kiva, who argues on him, says that you always need the knowledge of the owners when you return it. It's not sufficient that you returned it to the same location. You have to make them aware of the fact that you've returned the object. E Rabbi Shmuel, Ma'iria Lo Yichdu. According to this, if Rabbi Shmuel is really the author of our Mishnah, then why does it matter that he did not designate a place? Look at the beginning of the Mishnah. It says, "Vayu lo yichdu la balim makom." They didn't designate a place. Afilu yichdu nami. Even if you designate a place, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it will make no difference in the din. Rabbi Shmuel's statement about dat balim is irrespective of whether the object has a particular location or doesn't have a particular location. So why is our Mishnah specifying it's a case where you didn't specify a location? Even if you did specify the location, it wouldn't make a difference. But it says, "Lo mi boi kamar." It's saying not only this, lo mi bai, you don't have to tell me about a case of yichdu where you specified the place, dimkomahu, because then it has a specific location. And then you might have thought when you returned it to the specific location that you have discharged your obligation in terms of, quote unquote, dat balim, because you put it back where it originally was. Ela afilo lo yichdu. in our Mishnah, even in a case where there is no particular location for the object, the lav mikomahu, therefore there's never a place for it, lo be'inan dat balim, then you don't need bat balim, and that's the chiddush of the reisha of the Mishnah. That is, even when there is no particular location for the object, as long as you've returned it to the location where it is considered to be originally, doesn't mean the exact location, but the general location, or you have it in a place that would have been an equal qualitatively to the Shmira that you did before, that's considered to be returning it, and you don't need the Dat Balim. But then Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah? Yichtula habalim makom, if they did designate a place, v'teltula, and then he carried it around, v'nishbira, and it broke. Ben mitoch yado, ben she'enicha, whether it was while he was engaged with it, or whether it's after he put it down, litzorcho chayav, litzorcha patur. So if it's for his benefit, he's chayav, for its benefit, then he's not chayav, he's patur. Atan the Rabbi Kiva, the safe of the Mishnah sounds like Rabbi Kiva, damar bi'ina dat balim. That just returning it is not sufficient grounds to discharge your obligation of returning. You must notify the Baalim. So over here, I Rabbi Akiva, my area ichdu. According to Rabbi Akiva, what's so unique about designated a place? I feel a lo ichdu nami. Even if there was no designation of location, Rabbi Akiva still says that you need dat Baalim when you return it. So Gemara says, lo mi bayi kamar. Against again, not only. Lo mi bayi lo ichdu delav mikomahu. Not only in a case where you don't have a specific location, so therefore when you return it, it's hard to argue that you returned it to the Baalim. Ela afilu yichdu nami dimakomahu. Even the place where there is a specific location where the object belongs, and you returned it to that specific location, which would be as if you returned it to the Baalim, because you put it back. Be'ina dat Baalim. Rabbi Kiva still demands that you notify the Baalim, even if you returned it to that particular location. Gemara says, Reisha Rabbi Yishmael, V'seifa Rabbi Akiva. We have now a Mishnah where the first half of the Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael that you do not need Dat Balim. Second half of the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, who does require Dat Balim. In, where it says, in Ochanami, we have a problem here. Yes, that is the problem. We have a problem of dual authorship in this Mishnah. Dam Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Man de metargim li chavit aliba de chatana. Whoever can explain to me this Mishnah according to a single author, Movlana Mane Batre de Be Masuta, I will carry his clothes after him to the bathhouse. So first of all, that type of work or carrying clothes behind an individual to the bathhouse was considered to be the work of an Evid Kanani. It was work that was quote unquote denigrating to the point where an Evid Ivri is not allowed to do that, because it's beneath his dignity. That's something only appropriate for an Eved Knani or a Talmid for his Rebbe. So what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that if someone can give me an answer to this question or resolve this issue, then I'll act like a Talmid to him and I'll carry his clothes after him to the bathhouse. Or he might be saying this as an analogy, which is that he will say over the Memra in the name of this individual, even though he's his Talmid, Rabbi Yochanan will act as the Talmid and quote the Davar, B'Shem, whoever tells him it, as if he's his Rebbe. So Rabbi Yochanan is convinced that there's no way to solve the problem in the Mishnah. You make a statement like this when you're absolutely certain that nobody's going to figure out the answer. So Rabbi Yochanan is convinced of the fact that there's no solution to this Mishnah, and it has a problem of dual authorship, which is that the Reisha sounds like Rabbi Shmuel that doesn't require Dat Balim, and the Seifa sounds like Rabbi Akiva who does require Dat Balim. Now the Gemara says, Targuma Rabbi Yaakov Bar Abba Kameid Rav. So Rabbi Yaakov Bar Abba explained in front of Rav how to solve the problem in our Mishnah, to say, Shnatna Amanat L'Gozla, that he took it on the condition or within mind to steal it. He was intending to steal it. When he moved it at the time, he was intending to steal it. Targuma Rabbi Natan Bar Abba Kameid Rav, Shnatla Amanat L'Shloach Bayad. He took it with the intent of Shlichut Yad. So you can see here in Tosafot, Shnatla is Vihigbia, that he actually lifted it up. There will be a difference between simply if he tilts it over, or he does something without actually taking Hagbah, taking a Kinyan that makes it into a Kinyan Gzela. But the way that Rabbi Yaakov Bar Abba was explaining it is that he intended to steal it. Or the way that Rabbi Natan Bar Abba is explaining it is that he intended to be Sholeach Yad. Now, what the difference between shlichut yad and gezela is, that is subject to a machloket rishonim. You can see here in the Bali at Tosafot, and Rashi does something very similar. He says that the difference is, to take a portion of it. Even if he never actually takes that portion, he becomes chayav in the whole thing. And that key element is what Tosafot is tagging as the difference between shlichut yad and genevar gzela. Gzela is when I intend to take the entire object. Shlichut yad is where I intend to use a portion of it, not the entirety of it. But because I intend to take a portion of it, that already makes me responsible for the entirety of the object. That's the main view of the Rishonim as the difference between shlichut yad and gzela. There is alternate views, one of which is that the possibility that gzela is where you intend to take it with no intent to return it. I mean, that you plan on taking it and never returning it. You may have regrets later on and want to return it, but when you take it, you have no intention of returning it. On the other hand, shlichut yad is where you intend to take it, but replace it. It's equivalent or somewhat similar to shela shlo midat, borrowing something without permission. That's the equivalent of shlichut yad over here. You're borrowing without permission, which will come up in a second in the Gemara, and then you have to answer what's the difference between shlichut yad and shela shlo midat. So there are those that believe that there is no difference between them, or there are others who determine that there is this difference or a small difference between shlichut yad and shela shlo midat. The last possibility is that simply it's a gzeirat hakatuv, that the Torah says that when you're a shomer and you're sholeach yad, you go to do or you engage in the item in any way, that you become fully responsible for it. And therefore it might have nuances about it, which are not apparent by gzela. By gzela, the responsibility comes from certain actions or certain ways that you interact with the gzela. All those requirements may not be necessary by shlichut yad because of the gzeirat hakatuv. Not because there's any fundamental difference between them, but because of context. The Torah says when you're a shomer and you go and steal as a shomer, you have a different set of rules than a normal gazlan that's entering in and stealing. Whatever those reasons are, you have differences between shlichut yad and gzela. Again, the last possibility is that there is no difference between them. It's simply a way of expressing it, semantics issue, way of expressing it in different contexts. Shlichut yad is when you got it, quote unquote, with permission, but then you take it. Gzela is when you it came into your possession entirely where it was taken illegally or unlawfully. So now, here you have two explanations of the Mishnah. Rashi points out over here, the Gemara here is going to differentiate between Gezel and Shlichut Yad for a second, but then we're going to go on and give a third answer. After the third answer in the Gemara is going to qualify the Mishnah and explain to us how this all fits in or solves the problem of the Mishnah. Rashi says that this last statement qualifies all three of these answers. And we'll say that's important in a second. So Gemara says, Manda amar lo gozla, the one who says that he went to steal it, kasavar shlichut yad sricha chisaron. So this is that unique aspect of shlichut yad, which I mentioned before, some of the Rishonim, the Rosh, believes that the difference is here, gzeirat hakatuv by shlichut yad, that shlichut yad has an additional aspect to it, which is chisaron. It has to lose. You have to diminish the item in some way. Gzela in general does not have that requirement. You simply steal it. You take it out of the possession of the other party. That makes you responsible because of gazlan. Here, there might be a gzeirat hakatuv, a demand that shlichut yad is not simply that you take it out of the possession, because technically you're in possession of it because you were given it to watch. So you have to do something more than that, which includes chisaron, that you have to have some diminishment in the object. And the one explains that our Mishnah is a case of shlichut yad, will say that he believes that shlichut yad does not have this additional requirement of chisaron. So Rav Sheshet asks the question, mida natla ktani? It doesn't say in the Mishnah anywhere that he took it. The main aspect of both what Rav Yaakov Bar Abba says and Rabbi Nathan Bar Abba say is he took it with a specific intent. But that means that you're using the verb natla, that you actually took it intentionally to do something, whether it's to steal or shlichut yad. What Rav Sheshet points out is the Mishnah uses betotala, that he simply carried it. It doesn't seem to be that the carrying itself is what generated the problem, because the carrying seems to be a sidebar. He happened to move it because of whatever it was that he wanted. So El Amar of Sheshet Achamay Eskinan Gon Shetotula Lavi Aleh Guzlot. He moved it not to steal it. He moved it not to be Shalech Yad, but he moved it for his benefit to utilize it, basically as a ladder for the Guzlot, for the pigeons that he was keeping or raising. Either it's for them to step on to make their way up to the nest or to the dovecote, or it was for he himself to reach up to the nest. But the reason he's taking it is not for intention to steal it, not intention for shlichut yad, but simply to use it or utilize it in a way that would help him in another scenario, but it itself he doesn't intend to steal. But this is more akin to, because savar shoel shlomidat gazlan havi, that someone who borrows something without permission is deemed to be a gazlan. We already spoke about this back with Mari Bar Isak on Daf Chav Bet, that Shol Shalomidat, according to the Gemara's conclusion, is a gazlan. And then you have to determine when is someone considered a Shol Shalomidat, or when is their implicit understanding that the person might borrow it, or that the relationships of people allow for you to borrow it, or Makom Mitzvah. We discussed all the different exceptions to that rule. But what Rav Sheshet says is, in the end, that's exactly what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says that he carried it, letzorcho. What does it mean he carried it, letzorcho? He went to borrow it. He wasn't intending to steal it. He wasn't intending to use it or drink some of the wine. He simply just needed the barrel in a different location to help him out. And so he moves it there for that purpose. And that's a shoel shalomidat. And Rishon says shoel shalomidat is a gazlan. And because he's a gazlan, now he becomes chayav enonsin. Now here is the qualification of the Mishnah. Bekula Rabbi Ishmael hi. And it is all according to Rabbi Ishmael. V'seifa she'nicha b'makom she'ena mikoma. And the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa is that where did he return it to? In the Reisha, where there is no designated place, then wherever he returns it to is its place. Meaning that as soon as you return it or you stop utilizing it, it's basically returned to the Balim, according to Rabbi Ishmael, because there was no particular location where you had to return it to. Whereas in the Seifa, it was Yichtu Lamakom. They designated a place for it. So if till you return it to that particular place, you haven't returned it. And based on that, he says that the Seifa of the Mishnah is a case, Sheniach B'makom She'ena Mikoma. He put it back in a place that wasn't the original location, therefore it's not considered returned. So now, what you have here is an explanation of the Mishnah. And again, Rashi says this applies to all three of the answers that we saw. Whether you think it's natla l'gzela, natla l'shlichut yad, or natla l'shoel shalomidat, any of those cases require this ukimta in the Mishnah to assume that there is a single authorship of Rabbi Ishmael. And now that the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Ishmael, how do we explain the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa? Why is the din different? The difference has to do with what you did. In the Reisha, where there is no particular location for the object, whenever you return it, whenever you're finished with it, that's considered returned, because you don't need that balim according to Rabbi Shmuel, and you're done. On the other hand, for the Seifa of the Mishnah, where there is a designated location for it, until you've returned it to that designated location, you haven't returned the object. So now, in the Reisha, where you simply are done using it, or you put it back, then you're no longer responsible for it, because whatever you did is in the past. Now that you returned it, you don't need that balim. It's as if it's back in the possession of the balim, and you're back to being a shomer. You've terminated whatever interim category you were in, whether you were a gazlan, whether you were a sholeach yad, or whether you were a shol shalomidat, that terminated once you returned it to the owners. In the Seifa of the Mishnah, even though you put it down and you're done physically engaging, whether it's in gzela, shlichut yad, or shol shalomidat, nevertheless, since you didn't return it to the original location, you've never returned the object to the balim. Since you never returned it to the balim, you're still responsible for it, even in the location that it is, even after you've stopped being physically engaged with the object. And that'll be the difference between the Reisha and the Seifa. It'll all be authored by Rabbi Ishmael. The difference being whether you need to return it to the particular location or not. So then, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan accept these as proper answers? Again, when Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm taking their clothes after them to the bathhouse, it means Rabbi Yochanan really thinks there's no way to explain it. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan over here, hanicha bimkoma mashma. When it says that he placed it back, it sounds like he placed it back in its original location. You're making an akimta in the Mishnah to assume that the latter half of the Mishnah is hanicha shelo bimkoma, that you placed it back in a place that wasn't the original location or the place it needed to be. Rabbi Yochanan says, it says Mishenicha. Once you place it back, he says placing it back sounds like you placed it back where it originally came from. And therefore, I don't see this as being the explanation for the Mishnah. Now, many of the Rishonim point out over here that Rabbi Yochanan's rejection of the explanation is not simply the problem of the language in the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yochanan Icha Bimkoma Mashma, but rather a philosophical view of Rabbi Yochanan when you come to these problems, which is that when you have a Mishnah that seems to be internally inconsistent, you have two ways to solve that problem. One way to solve that problem is to say that there is dual authorship of the Mishnah, two Tanaim. It's a mix of two Tanaim's positions. The other way to explain the Mishnah is explain what's called Trei Tameh, to give two different reasons for the Mishnah, meaning that's one Tana, but the cases are differentiated somehow. One case is like this, the other case is different, which is what we did here to solve the problem. So what the Rabbi Yochanan is rejecting in the end is what Rav is accepting. Rav is accepting the possibility that you could explain a Mishnah with a single authorship, with two Tameh, with two different reasons. The Mishnah is different. The first case in the Mishnah is where he returned it. Second half of the Mishnah is where he didn't return it, because he didn't take it back to the location that was designated. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan, and this is explicit in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, so that's how we know that Rabbi Yochanan's position is otherwise. He says over there that he'd rather set up a Mishnah betray Tanayei as two different authors than a single author with two different reasons. And so Rabbi Yochanan rejects this type of explanation for the Mishnah. So not only does he not like it from the language perspective, he doesn't like it fundamentally. He won't allow you to solve the problem of a Mishnah to say it's a single author with two different reasons. To him, that's worse than saying that it's two different authors. And so that's why Rabbi Yochanan basically says, I would be excited to find someone who will tell me that it's a single authorship, but a single authorship the way that I like it, which is a single authorship with the same reason. I mean, that's a consistent Mishnah with a single authorship. If you can't do that, then I'm going to leave it as being a dual-authored Mishnah. And that's how he rejects. Here you have a machloket here between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan as to the better way to explain the Mishnah. Rav is accepting it being explained according to Rabbi Shmuel, but with two different ta'amim, or two different reasons, erasing the sefer, different cases. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan rather leave it as two ta'naim and keep it a consistent ta'am in the Mishnah. Okay, now Itmar, now that we've gone on to this issue of Shlichud Yad, now the Gemara wants to clarify a little more about this Shlichud Yad issue, which is Rav Levi. We have a machlok between Rav and Levi. Chadamah Shlichud Yad Tzricha Chisaron. That Shlichud Yad requires some sort of diminishment in the object. V'chadamah Shlichud Yad Eina Tzricha Chisaron. And one of them says that Shlichud Yad does not require any diminishment in the object. Tistayim Deravu Damah Shlichud Yad Eina Tzricha Chisaron. Let us conclude that Rav is the author of the two Amoraim here. Rav is the author of the opinion that Shlichud Yad does not require a chisaron. Detanya, we have a braita. He was a shepherd that was watching his flock. And he leaves the flock out grazing and he comes back to the city. Whether he was permitted to come back to the city, maybe it was the normal protocol for someone to come back to the city. Or it's a case where he needed food or whatever reason, he had a reason to come back to the city. Ubazev vitaraf. In the interim, while he left the flock out grazing in the fields, then a wolf comes along and takes away or grabs away one of the sheep. Ubari vitaras. Or a lion comes and takes prey right on the spot and eats it. Patur. Then he is patur because these are things that are beyond his control. And that he can't stop the wolf or the lion from coming and taking away animals. He's not going to overpower either of those animals. So actually Rashi notes that one of the possibilities of why he went back to the city is he heard the lion roaring. And he didn't want to be around for the lion while he was there. So it's not a case where his being there would have stopped the Ze'eb or the Ari, but rather his leaving the animals, we have something that happens. Is he responsible? The answer is no, because he couldn't have done anything about it. And he's also not a posheya. If he was a posheya, then you'd already be entering into another situation of tchileto b'pshia v'sofa bonus, which is he did something negligent by leaving them, but then the end result was something that had bonus. So we're not saying that. We're assuming the case here is where he left with permission and something happened. But there is an exception to that, which is a case, heniach maklo b'tarmilo alea. If he left his staff and his shepherd's pouch on the back of one of the animals, then chayav, he is responsible for it. Why? Vavinen ba, mishum deniach maklo b'tarmilo alea chayav? Just because he put his staff and his pouch on the animal, he becomes chayav. Ha shaklinu. He already took them off the back of the animal. He removed them already. And if you look here, Rashi notes over here that the assumption is that this is according to the shita of Rabbi Ishmael. That you don't need dat balim to return it. So as soon as he takes the objects off the animal, then it should be done. In that even if you were not supposed to utilize the animal, and now you utilize the animal to carry around items on the back of the animal, that means that you, in a sense, were sholeach yad in this animal. But as soon as you've removed the items, and we pass on like Rabbi Shmuel that you don't need dat balim, then you've discharged your obligation. You're done with whatever you needed to do. You return the animal to its owner by taking your objects off of the animal. So the Gemara doesn't understand why are you chayav if you put your items on the animal if you've already removed them. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rabbi Barvu, Amar Rav Bodan Aleha. They're still on it. He left his bag and his staff on the back of the animal when he returned to the city. That's why he's chayav. Gemara says, V'chi Odan Aleha, my havi. Even if his items were on the animal, why does that make a difference? Halo Mashcha. He never made a kinyan to be chayav. In order to be chayav as a gazlan, you need to make a kinyan on the object. Similarly, in order to be chayav shlichut yad, you have to, at least according to Beit Hillel, there is a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, if just thinking about taking it makes it your responsibility. But assuming that we paskin that you actually have to physically take it to be shaleach yad, you have to make a kinyan. You have to do something that brings it into your possession and makes you responsible. You simply putting your items on the back of the animal is not a sufficient form of kinyan to make it your responsibility. So Amrav Shmuel Barav Yitzchak Amrav Shi Kisha B'Makel. He hit it with the stick, or when he placed the stick on it, he put it down a little more heavy-handed. Beratzdalifanav, and then it moved in front of him. If you remember from the Mishnayot and Kiddushin, as well as what we discussed before in the Gemara, that he Kisha B'Makel can be a form of kinyan. You saw that in Baba Kama, where the ganavim, by chasing the animal out and hitting it with a stick, you became responsible for the item, or we saw that by Hashabbat Aveda, that if you cause the animal to move by throwing dirt at it or by screaming at it, then you become responsible, return the Aveda, because that's a form of kinyan. You make the animal move. It's equivalent of a kinyan mishicha, of you pulling the animal, moving it. There are different ways to make the animal move. One way is by pulling it, the other way is by driving it, or using your voice to make it move. So over here, he was koneed by being makishit, by moving the animal. Gemara says, v'locha lo chasro. By the animal, there was no diminishment in value here in the animal. There's no chisaron in the animal. You're simply putting your little pouch and your stick on the back of the animal. That doesn't cause a loss of value in the animal. From this, you would conclude that Rav, who is bringing this all down and speaking about how to explain it, Rav says that in the end that the conclusion would be that you don't need a chisaron from this, because how does he have you be responsible in the end? You have your stuff on the back of the animal, and you drove the animal, you made a kinyan. No loss of animal, you're shaleach yad, because you're utilizing the animal for your own benefit. He's carrying around your stuff for you. But you're not hurting the animal or diminishing its value anyway, and yet you are responsible for the animal. Gemara says, Ema shim hichisha b'makel. Says, not only did he hikisha, he hit it, in order to drive the animal, but also he caused it to be weakened by that. Dekanami, the Gemara says that actually is menduyak from the Lashon, Diktani, shihikisha b'makel, shmamina. It sounds like that he hit it with the makel, not simply that he drove it with the makel, but he hit it hard with the makel. And so when he hits it with the makel, when he put his stuff on it, he actually hurt the animal, or he weakened the animal in hitting it. So therefore, now you would conclude just the opposite. Shmamina, that Rav requires shlichud yad, that with chisaron, that you have some diminishment in the value of the animal. Rashi over here asks a basic question and says, how come you have to say over here that we're talking about shlichud yad? Why don't we say over here that it is She'ela shlomidat, that he borrowed it without permission? Just before, Rav Sheshit made the same assumption when it came to the Mishnah, our barrels in the Mishnah, where he said that you don't have to say that it's shlichud yad, you could simply say that she'ela shlomidat. He borrowed it without permission in order to utilize it. He didn't plan on shlichud yad, and that would solve the whole problem here. In order to have she'ela shlomidat, you don't need any chisaron, you don't need any of that. So why are we going through all these machinations if you could explain it, that it's just simply shelish lomidat? So Rashi answers that question and says, "Dechi amrinim b'shomrim she'lo shlamidat b'davar shenu kichesh v'chiser machmat malacha." The only time we call something she'lo shlamidat is where the object itself does not diminish from utilizing it. It is something that, after you've utilized it or borrowed it, that item is in the same condition and the same state as it was before. Aval balei chayim hamachishim. When you're talking about animals who are weakened, machmat malacha, after they do work, tchilat shlichut yad to tchilato shlichut yadi. From the outset, it's considered to be shlichut yad. So when the birds jump up and down on the barrel, they're not going to affect the barrel at all. That doesn't change the barrel. You're simply using it and they're going to put it back. It's not going to change any of the dynamics here. That might even extend further. Rashi doesn't mention it here, but the Rishonim mention it when we spoke about this by Mari Ba'isak, that Shela Shalomidat might also be true in cases of insignificance, which is sometimes, like in this instance, you have a matchbox where you have a ton of matches in there. If someone borrows one match, are people makbid on someone taking one match from the box? That might be Shela Shalomidat, even though you have no intent of returning it. You're not intending to return it. You're actually taking something that will not be replaced. But since it's so insignificant, people don't care. Or a pen with ink in it. If a person borrows a pen to sign a document, are you makbid on the little amount of ink that he uses? That might also be in the category of she'lo shlamidat. Rashi over here doesn't speak about a differentiation, but here Rashi speaks about the fact that she'lo shlamidat involves items that are going to be returned intact. And therefore, that's not a relevant consideration in our case. In the case of the Mishnah, it was relevant because it's a barrel. It's an inanimate object that has integrity to it, and you can utilize it for birds climbing up and down on it, and it won't affect the barrel at all. On the other hand, when you're talking about the case of animals, animals, when they work, get either hurt, weakened, or tired, whatever it is, there is diminishment in the strength of the animal through that work. And therefore, there's never she'lo shlamidat because you never return the same item exactly in the same state that it was before because you utilized it. And therefore, there is depreciation or whatever it is that happened in the interim. So that's why the Gemara came to this answer. Now, once the Gemara has concluded this, Shmamina, umidrav, savar shlichud yad, the tzricha chisaron. If Rav is the one who believes that shlichud yad requires some diminishment in the object's value or strength, Levi savar shlichud yad, ain't a tzricha chisaron. Levi must believe that you don't need a chisaron. My time of the Levi. Why does Levi believe that shlichud yad does not require any diminishment in value? And again, in that scenario that you believe you don't require any chisaron, you have to explain why there's a difference between gzeila and shlichud yad. According to Rav, where their chisaron is there, that could be a key difference between them. That's what the Rosh was saying about the gzeirat hakatuv. According to Rav, you could say gzeila is a case where you don't need chisaron to be chayav in gzeila. Shlichud yad requires that you do have a chisaron in order to be chayav. That might be the simple difference between them, gzeirat hakatuv. On the other hand, if you believe like Levi that there isn't such a requirement, then what was the difference between shlichud yad and gzeila? That's what we discussed before. Whether it's only intent to take part of it, intent to return it. And again, then you could also ask what's the difference between she'lo shlamidat and shlichud yad. Rashi already told you what the difference is. She'lo shlamidat goes back identical or exactly the way that you took it. A shlichud yad is a case where there is going to be some utilization or diminishment in the object itself. But again, here you have others that think that there is no difference between them. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Orai, Mishune shlichud yad amura b'shomer sachar, Mishlichud yad amura b'shomer chinam. It is differentiated, or really what the Gemara is going to say in the end, unnecessary to write shlichud yad by shomer sachar than it is by the shlichud yad of shomer chinam. So you know that in Parshat Mishpatim we have two parshiot that deal with a shomer. They don't tell you what the shomer is, but we spent a lot of time in Baba Kama dissecting these two different parshiot, and we know that the first one is speaking about a case of shomer chinam, and the second one is speaking about a case of shomer sachar. I'm just going to read them quickly to remind ourselves because it's going to come up here. It says, ki yiten ish el reyu kesef o kelim lishmor. Gives objects to his friend to guard. Vigunav ibeit ha'ish. And it was stolen. Im yimatzei ha'ganav, yishaleim shnayim. If the ganav is found, he has to pay kefil. Im lo yimatzei ha'ganav, if the ganav is not found, v'nikrav balabait el Elohim, the balabait goes to the beit din. Im lo shalach yado v'melechet reyu. To declare that he hasn't been Shaleach Yad. Or, in essence, he takes a Shvuah that he was not Shaleach Yad. And then the Al-Khol Davar Pesha, Al-Shor, Al-Khamor, Al-Sel, Samal, Kol Aveda, She Yomar, Ki Uzeh, Ad Elohim, Yavog, Davar Shnehem, She Yashinu Elohim, Yishalem, Shnaim, Nereyu. Requirement of Kefel. Within this is also embedded Toein Tanat Ganav. The Shomer Chinam claims that it was stolen, and then we find out that he himself stole it, then he's also Chayav Kefil. That'll become important in the Gemara. Then after that, we have another parshia that says, Ki Yitein Ish Ereyu, Chamor Oshor Oseh V'chol Behema Lishmor. Give it objects for a Shomer to watch. Umeit, it dies. Onishbar Onishba Ein Roeh. Or it was broken, it was taken away, it was eaten by a lion. Shvuat Hashem Tiyeh Ben Shnehem. There will be a shvua between them. Here explicitly says the word shvua. Im lo shalach yado b'melechet reyu. To declare that he wasn't shaleach yad. Lakach bala v'lo yishalem. The balaim will have to accept the shvua and he won't have to pay from it. Im ganoi v'ganevi imo. If it was stolen, yishalem the balav. Then he has to pay for it. Im tarof yitaref yuveoed a trefa lo yishalem. If it was a trefa, I mean again, the case of a lion or a zeb that comes in and attacks it, then he doesn't have to pay for it. The first parashiyah is talking about a shomer chinam, where he's patur from gneiva and aveda. He's only chayav in pshia or shlichut yad. The second parashiyah is talking about a shomer sachar. By gneiva, he is chayav. By aveda, he is chayav. He's patur only for things that are unseen, things that are unforeseen or uncontrollable events. That's what he's patur for. In both cases, you require a shvu'ah to say that you were not sholeach yad. And what Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, this is the reason behind Levi's position why you don't require chisaron b'shlichut yad, is because it was unnecessary. And that is, v'ani omer, and Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with this and says, einu mishuneh, I don't think it is unnecessary, or I don't agree with the limud of my Rebbe. So he quotes from Rabbi Yossi ben Nohuraya's Rebbe, who says that there is, in a sense, we're going to see this in one second, the shlichut yad by shomer sachar is extraneous or unnecessary. But Rabbi Yochanan says that's not the case. And now Gemara says, my mishuneh. What is different about it? Lo tomar shlichut yad b'shomer sachar v'teite mishomer chinam. Why do I need you to tell me that he has to take a shvua about not being sholeach yad by shomer sachar? I would have known from shomer chinam. Ma shomer chinam shepatur b'gneva v'aveida. A shomer chinam who is patur in gneva v'aveida. Shalach bayad chayav. If he was sholeach yad in the object, he becomes responsible for the object. Shomer sachar shechayav b'gneiva aveda. Shomer sachar who is chayav in gneiva aveda. Lo kol shekein. Certainly he'd be responsible if he is sholeach yad. So why did the Torah explicitly write it again by shomer sachar? L'may hilchato katvinu rachmano. Why did the Torah write it again by shomer sachar? Lo marlocha. To teach you. Shlichut yad eina tzricha chisaron. To teach you that the shlichut yad does not require chisaron. Now, the truth is that once you have this, how do you know it applies by Shomer Chinam as well? Now you know by Shomer Sachar that Shlichut Yad does not require Chisaron. How do you know that's true by Shomer Chinam? So Tosfot says in the end that it's a Gilui Milta. It's a Gilui Milta that by Shomer Sachar, once we know that that's extraneous, and now we define the term Shlichut Yad to mean something without a Chisaron, that determination or that definition will be applicable to all times that we mention Shlichut Yad. And therefore also by Shomer Chinam, we will say the same thing, that the Shlichut Yad there does not require a Chisaron, even though it's not possible to learn it through a Kal V'chomer, it's simply a Giloi Milta. It defines for us the term Shlichut Yad over here. Then he says, V'ani Omer, Eina Mishuneh. And I say, Rabbi Yochanan says, I don't agree with my Rebbe, and I think it's not extraneous. Kid Rabbi Elazar, like Rabbi Elazar, Damar Davada Achati. They are both one. My Davada Achati. What does that mean, that they are both one? Mishum the ika al mifrach, because you can undermine the kal v'chomer between shomer chinam and shomer sachar. Mal shomer chinam shekei mishalem tashlumei kefel. A shomer chinam can end up in a position where he's paying kefel, where he's toein tanat ganav, where he makes a claim that it was stolen, and we find out that he himself stole it. In that case, he's going to pay kefel, and a shomer sachar will never be in a position of paying kefel. Because if there's gneiva, he's automatically chayav the karen. So he'll never be in a position of paying kefil, because even if he makes a claim it was stolen, he's responsible and he's got to pay for it. So there is no kefil by him. So mandalo parich, savar, the one who doesn't ask this question, meaning that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, who both believe that it's not clear that a shomer sachar is more chamur than a shomer chinam, because the shomer chinam has a tzad chumra to him, which is he pays kefil and a shomer sachar doesn't pay kefil. So what about his Rabbi Yossi ben Norai? Why did he think there is a kal v'chomer here? Because he doesn't accept what they're saying. Because he savar karna b'lo shvua difa mikfela b'shvua. That having to pay karen all the time is more chamur than having to pay kefil b'shvua. A Shomer Chinam is not Chayav Kefel just because he makes a claim of Gneva. He's Chayav Kefel because he lied under oath and said that it was Gneva. So the trigger for the Kefel is not the fact that he's a Shomer Chinam, not the fact that it was stolen or he claimed that it was stolen. It is because he took a Shvat Sheker that it was stolen. That's what generates the necessity for Kefel. For that end, by a Shomer Sachar, you're always Chayav for the Keren. And so what he says is being Chayav for the Keren all the time is more chamor than being in a position where you might end up with kefel in a scenario where he lies under oath about the gneva that he might end up with kefel. That's both a far-fetched case, but also not certain, and maybe even other triggers that cause it, including the shvat sheker. May not have to do with the fact that he's a shomer chinam at all. And therefore, it's not considered to be a chumrah. It's not a chumrah, you can have the limud. Tosfot over here, there's a very large tosfot that deals with this, says that this position of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar is very difficult. Because once they say that, how do you know that the first parsha is talking about Shomer Chinam and the second parsha is talking about Shomer Sachar? The basic logic of why we say that is because the first parsha is the Kula and the second parsha is the Chumrah. So if I have to differentiate and say which one was the Shomer Chinam and which one's the Shomer Sachar, I would say the one the Kula is the Shomer Chinam, the one the Chumrah is the Shomer Sachar. So then, why, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, say it's not clear which one is more the Chumrah? The first one might be more chamor because it has kefel. The second one might be more chamor because it has keren in it. So how do they know which one's talking about a shomer chinam and which one's talking about a shomer sachar? So Tosfot asks this question, and it's a very fundamental problem for Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. So he does quote in the name of the Rashbam, Perish Rabbeinu Shmuel, Dimisvari Yadina. We know it from a svara. Why is that? Because in the first parasha it writes, Kesef O Kelim, Virigilu to the Shamram Bechinam. Kesef and Kelim, which don't require much work or effort, people tend to watch those without taking compensation. Delek behu tircha. Parsha shniyakti behema. The objects that are being deposited in the second parsha are animals. Dika tircha. Vrigilot lishamra bischar. And therefore people normally watch it for compensation. That's one way to explain the logical difference. Oh, inami lechuliyama idlu de karna adifa mikfela bishvua. Everybody agrees that Karen, having to pay Karen all the time, versus having to pay kefel de shvua, Karen is more chamur. Mikom makom svirlo de Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Elazar de ein limod shomer sachar mi shomer chinam akal kemit sheyesh bo chumra. That since there is this chumra, that any little pircha can undermine a kal v'chomer. And so even though a shomer sachar is clearly more chamur than a shomer chinam, since there is this aspect of chumra by shomer chinam, that's enough of a reason to undermine the kal v'chomer. And that actually might be the reason here, which is that they're simply trying to deflect an answer. By deflecting an answer, if you come up with any little reason to deflect the logic, that's enough. So they do believe that a Shomer Sachar is more Chamor than a Shomer Chinam. But they're saying, if you're going to make it a Kal V'Chomer to say it's unnecessary to write something by a Shomer Sachar because you can learn it from Shomer Chinam, that's not so clear. Because Shomer Chinam has special dinim as well. It has Kefel sometimes. He has chumrot that don't make it as obvious that everything in Shomer Chinam is equally applicable to a Shomer Sachar, and therefore your limud is not correct. And so now the Gemara continues. Rav Amar, lo tomar shlichud yad, lo b'shomer chinam, v'lo b'shomer sachar. Rav takes it a step further and says, having shlichud yad by a Shomer Sachar or a Shomer Chinam is completely unnecessary. Why? Teite mishoel. We can learn it out of a shoel, a borrower. A borrower is someone who is responsible for everything, which is what the parsha says. It's the third parsha of Shomrim. Im yishal ish mi'im reyu, v'nishbar u'meit, balav en imo yishalem yishalem. He has to pay for it. Im balav imo lo yishalem. Im sacharu ba bischaro. That's the case of a sucher. So what the Gemara says is that a shoel is responsible for anything that happens to the animal. And now here's the kal v'chomer. Ma shoel deladat balim ka'avit. By a shoel, if he has permission to utilize the object. That's the whole purpose of him borrowing it, is in order to utilize it. Nevertheless, im shalach bayad chayav. If he actually takes it or utilizes it in a manner that he does not have permission to do, or he tries to steal it, depending what you think shlichud yad is, chayav, you are responsible. Shomer chinam v'shomer sachar lo koshukein. By Shomer Chinam and Shomer Sachar, certainly you should be responsible for Shlichut Yad, because over there you don't have permission to utilize the object whatsoever. So if you go ahead and take it, or you possess it, then you're clearly Shaleach Yad. So he says, why does the Torah write that he has to take a Shvuah, no Shlichut Yad by Shomer Chinam, no Shlichut Yad by Shomer Sachar? I know that from a shoel. A shoel who has permission to use it still is responsible for shtikul yad. Certainly shom bechiram and shom sechar. So lama ne'amar. So then now why do the psukim have it there? Chada lomar locha shlichud yad ein tzricha chisaron. One of them to teach you that shlichud yad does not require chisaron. V'idach shlo tomar tayol lovo min adin liot kenidon. That whenever you have a kal v'chomer, the thing that you're learning out can't be more chamor than the source of the limud. So now, ma shoel bibalim patur. A shoel, if he borrows the object and utilizes it with the owners there, he is patur. So you would think now too, av shom echinam shom zachar bibalim patur. The shom echinam shom zachar, if they do shlichud yad when the balim are present, maybe they should be patur. And that's when it comes to negate. Which is that, generally, a shoel has a special dispensation that if the owners are there with him, something that we'll learn later in the Masechta, that the owners are present, or it depends when, what, that's all defined later on in the Gemara. But the Torah says, im balav imo, that if the owners are there with him, then lo yishalem, he is patur. That's a unique aspect to shoel. The problem is if we learn shlichud yad from shoel, that means that whatever the dinim of shoel are going to be equally applicable to shom echinam and shom sechar. Just like a shoel, shlichud yad doesn't apply when the balim are there, so too for shom echinam and shom sechar. That means that if the balim are there, there's no shlichud yad. So even if you take it with intent to steal it, if the balim are there, not chayav. So now we don't want that to be the case. So that's why the Torah wrote shlichud yad by shom echinam and by shom sechar. One, to teach you that shlichud yad does not require a chisaron. Number two, to teach you that shlichud yad applies by shom echinam and shom sechar, even if the balim are present. So that's what it comes to teach you. Now again, Tosfot, you have to say the same thing in Tosfot again, it's only teaching you by one of them, either shom sechar or shom echinam, and through a gilui milta, you'll learn to the other one. But that teaches you that shlichud yad does not have a tour for balav imo, with regards to shom echinam and shom sechar. Rashi over notes over here that when Rava is coming to explain that you don't need shlichud yad, he's saying this perish Rashi to Safar afilu to Rabbi Elazar, that this is even according to Rabbi Elazar or Rabbi Yochanan, who believe that you can't learn from a shomer sechar or a shomer chinam. Over here, you don't have that problem anymore because you're starting with a shoel. So a shomer sechar and a shomer chinam can both learn out of a shoel. There, it's clear that a shomer chinam or a shomer sechar are the kula versus a shoel, or the chumrah with regards to shlichud yad of a shoel. And so over there, I don't have this problem anymore of which is more chamor, shomer sechar or shomer chinam. And so he overcomes the problem, Rava says, by doing this. Even though in the end, you have to learn shomer sechar from shomer chinam or shomer chinam from shomer sechar. Because each one of them has one extraneous shlichud yad. One of them teaches you about chisaron, the other one teaches you about balav imo. And you have to learn one to the other. The answer in the end, like Tosfot says, it's a giloi milta. And therefore, you don't need this limud of a kal v'chomer, or which one is more chamor. So this solution will be a solution even according to the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar. So now Gemara says, Uleman damar shlichud yad tzricha chisaron. This is all according to Levi, who says that shlichud yad doesn't require chisaron. But according to Rav, who says that it does require chisaron, then hane tarte shlichud yad lomali. Why do I need both of these shlichud yad? One of them I understand to teach me that balav imo is not an exemption. But what about the other shlichud yad? What do you need it for? Chadash lo tomar dayol avo min adin liot kenidon. One of them for what we just said, to teach you that balav imo is not an exemption by shomer chinam and shomer sechar when it comes to shlichud yad. Ve'idach, and the other shlichud yad comes to teach you liktanya. This is for this brayta. It says, v'nikrav balabayit el Elohim. It says that the person will go to the Beit Din. It's not clear what is meant by that pasuk. There are two possibilities. One is that he shows up in Beit Din and makes a claim. The other possibility is when he comes by Beit Elohim and he takes a shvua. The Braita says lishvua. The intent of the pasuk means, where does he come to the Beit Din to take a shvua? Atah omer lishvua when el din. How do you know it means that he's coming to take a shvua? Maybe he's coming to adjudicate the case and make his claims. Nemra shlichut yad lemata v'nemra shlichut yad lemala. It says shlichud yad by shomer sechar, and as I read to you before, by the shlichud yad of a shomer sechar, it says shvuat Hashem tiyeh ben shnehem in lo shalach yado melechet reyu v'lekach v'lo v'lo yishalein. The shvuah by the shomer sechar is explicit. You take a shvuah that you were not shloach yad. And so what the Gemara says is, it says shlichud yad the mato by shomer sechar, and there it's clearly a shvuah. It says shlichud yad by shomer chinam, and there it says v'nikrav balabayit Elohim. I don't know what it means. I make a gzera shava that says shlichud yad by shomer sachar lamato, shlichud yad by shomer chinam lamalo, and I will learn, just like there's a shvua by the shomer sachar, so too the shomer chinam, and that's what the brayta says. And nemra shlichud yad lamato by shomer sachar, nemra shlichud yad lamalo by shomer chinam, mala halan, just like by shomer sachar, it is a shvua, because it says shvuat Hashem tiyah ben shneihem. Afkan l'shvua, so too in the case of Shomer Chinam, it is a shvua when it says Nikra Balabayit El Elohim. But now we have another problem, which is Levi, who says he needs the two shlichut yad to teach you, one, that there's no chisaron by shlichut yad, a requirement of chisaron. Number two is that there's no ptur balavimo by shlichut yad. Where does he learn out that it's a shvua by Shomer Chinam? He doesn't have the availability of the shlichut yad. The Balei Tosafot point out over here that there are plenty of overlapping words in the pasuk. You don't have to use the word shlichud yad. You could use other words in the pasuk or other pieces to make the gzeirah shava. That's one possibility. I've overcome the problem and just simply say there is a gzeirah shava because I have other words that make the gzeirah shava. Or the other thing is to say that maybe you don't need mufneh, which is a philosophical approach to gzeirah shava. Do you only say gzeirah shava when the words are extraneous? Or do you say gzeir shava even when the words are utilized, but I have the common words and therefore I learn something? So if you say that you can learn gzeir shava even when it's not mufneh, then it won't be a problem. I need both statements, but I also have the gzeir shava. It teaches me what the meaning of nikra balabait Elohim is, because it says shlichud yad by both cases. So for either one of those two reasons, we would then say that Levi has all three limudim over here. Number one, that shlichud yad, both by shomer sachar and shomer chinam, means take a shvuah. Number two is that shlichud yad does not require chisaron. And number three is that shlichud yad does not require if balim or imo, that does not exempt you from shlichud yad. So that's how Levi will learn it. Rav will learn the gzeirah shava, that you require shvuah, and the fact that you balav imo is not a ptur. He won't learn about chisaron, because he believes that you do need a chisaron by shlichud yad. All right, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Bet.